Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. This podcast is for those who are committed to thriving no matter where they are on that journey. And I say journey because thriving is not about achievement. It is not a destination. It's about engagement. It's about being energized by our life. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host. And I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or you may be considering your next career. You might be an entrepreneur or a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something's calling to you and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us so that when challenges show up, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's dive in to today's episode. My guest today is the founder and CEO of Impact Africa Network, a nonprofit startup studio in Nairobi with a mission to ensure young, talented Africans have a chance at participating in the digital transformation of Africa as both creators and owners. After 15 years in Silicon Valley, he chose to move back to Africa to immerse himself in the economic development challenge. His name is Mark Karake, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bobby, for having me.
Absolutely. Good. I've been looking forward to this interview, and I thought we might start with how our paths originally crossed. It started when I read two of your articles, and they're both very, very powerful. Basically, in your first article, you set up there's a problem, and it's a big problem. And then in the second article, I loved it because you said, okay, I wrote a nice article. So what? You know, now what? What do I do about it? And it was so compelling for me because I love it when someone sees a problem and they're like, okay, so how can I be part of the solution? So do you kind of want to fill us in on those two articles and what led us to here?
Yeah. So the first article was really around, it's a chapter from a book I'm working on. I don't know, Bobby, if you've worked with a book, if you have plans for doing something like that, it is a challenging proposition.
It is. It's a commitment.
So anyway, it is a commitment, and maybe we can have another conversation about that. But in any case, the article that I wrote is out of a chapter of a book I'm working on, and it's really around it's autobiographical, and it's really around my journey from Africa to living in the U.S. and becoming a man, becoming an adult in America, and then coming back. So that's the premise of the book, and why. The reason I'm writing that book is because, in a very real sense, it connects to the story of what I'm doing right now back home in Africa. Mm-hmm. I'm an American citizen. I consider myself American in mindset, but African in soul. I straddle both worlds very, very well because I spent 20 years in the U.S. and that's where I became an adult. I mean, I went to the U.S. to go to university, and then I stayed there and built a career and all that. Anyway, so this article specifically is out of a chapter, out of a time when I lived in San Francisco between 2014 and I think 2016, after which I moved to Oakland, which is across the bridge, basically the same kind of area. But in any case, what I wrote about was my experience being a Black man in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And the total canceled experience that was. Being in an environment, but not being of it. Being caught up in the zeitgeist of what San Francisco is known for right now, which is the tech industry, and having a career there, but really not having a seat at the table. And I'm not talking about from even an opportunity standpoint, which part of that it is, but it's just as a human being. Just as if any individual who's ever been othered or made to feel like they're not part of a community, there's nothing as assaultative to the human spirit as being ostracized. and being othered. And so my Black experience in San Francisco was really that. That experience built around this, what we see in America right now, what has become quite apparent about Black men and Black people in general being, in a very real sense, eliminated and nothing, with no consequences. So while the backdrop of my experience in San Francisco was that you're supposed to be seen and not heard, and that's it, it was also on the backdrop of actual people being gunned down, and we seeing that on cell phone video. So that was kind of like my experience at that time, right? Yeah. So that's And then the second article. So what happened? This is what's interesting. So what happened was, I'm going through this book, and I'd written that chapter some time back. I think I'd gone through that chapter maybe in January or something of that nature. And I think it was in May when the George Floyd.
Yep.
So George Floyd happened. I think it was in May. And when that happened, because I've seen that so many times, right? And I'd written about that in that particular article, in that chapter that we're talking about. I was like, man, you got to put this out. And I was kind of hesitant. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to, you know, where am I coming from putting this out? I had to make sure that it was coming from a good place in the right place, right? Not trying to kind of take advantage of anything. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I headed up one Saturday morning, sitting down, looking at it, reviewing it and saying, okay, I'm going to put it out. And part of the work I'm doing here, the work I'm doing here fundamentally is bridging the gap for entrepreneurship in our ecosystem here in Nairobi. And having spent many years in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, and seen how so much support and just the way things are done there from an entrepreneur support standpoint, the reason I moved back was because I had seen that it was obvious that entrepreneurs here locally were not getting the support that they needed. And everybody kept talking about Africa's development, but that's never going to happen if you don't support entrepreneurs. So that's the reason I moved back. So I had launched a nonprofit entity, Impact Africa Network. Our URL is impactafrica.network. And so I was working on this project. I had been working in it for some time, and a significant element of a nonprofit is fundraising. And we are, you know, US 501c3 and all that. So we had an audience of folks who we are targeting for from a fundraising perspective. And it was really around the successful people in Silicon Valley. There's one thing about that place, right? There's two realities. There's a systemic kind of like oppression that's just built into just American life for the most part. But the individuals were amazing. And that's the interesting dichotomy in the Bay Area, right? That place has a spirit of helping each other out at the individual level and people going out of their way to help one another. It's just a culture of the place in the tech ecosystem generally, but there more specifically. And so I knew there were amazing people who, once they were successful, wanted to give back. And that was the whole motion that those people aspired to. Like, let's build wealth and let's go and make a difference in the world. I'll do those two things simultaneously, if you will. So I knew that the people in the Bay Area were the best audience for the work I was doing, because they would just get it. And they had the heart for making a difference, heart for entrepreneurship. Somebody had helped them when they were coming up. So this is the backdrop in which now I put up this article. And I was like, okay, it's about San Francisco. It's titled The Last Black Man in San Francisco. It's about my experience there. If anybody needs to hear about this, it's those people in the Bay Area. And so I sent it out to a few tech entrepreneurs who, none of them had ever actually responded to any of our messages, our email messages, you know, trying to connect with them to see if they'll support us philanthropically. That was a Saturday. So Sunday morning, I wake up and I get an email in my inbox I look into my phone and I have an email from one of the CEOs. And I'm like, uh-oh, what's this? And he's like, hey, your article was amazing. You know, I don't know if you saw, like, Jeff Wiener of LinkedIn posted it on LinkedIn, and it's going to create a lot of buzz in the ecosystem today. And I'm like, holy cow, this is crazy, because this is what we've been waiting for, right? Like, so I mean, it's not what I had anticipated. I thought it would just kind of like go the way of, you know, the silent whimper. Nothing happens. But here we are. So this Sunday morning, and I'm like, oh my God, it's happening. And so I pull our team together on a Sunday, our fundraising team, and I say, folks, we've got to respond, because the article by itself will not yield any results, right? Because it's just about my time there. Right. But then the question is, and then what? Right? Yeah. It moves people, but to what end? And so that's when we were brainstorming at 10 a.m. on Sunday on Zoom. And we're like, okay, what do we need to do? We need to respond. We need to give an and then what path. And so fortunately, we had spent quite a bit of time, like months and months and a year and a half, just kind of building our fundraising infrastructure and learning from mistakes and all kinds of stuff. So we had built a number of different fundraising kind of themes. And one was this micro donations program, which is basically allowing people to give small amounts of money on a monthly basis, just like a Netflix subscription. And we knew this thing is going to get some eyeballs and we need to capture that energy. And so the answer became write a follow-up article to that, that links for that first one to this one, rather links the first article to now what am I doing about it? Yep. And so that's those two articles. And here we are. I mean, the effect of it was amazing in terms of just being able to, Bobby, you know, it's interesting because I've always wondered what it would feel like when you got, you know, people work hard and everybody has experienced that doubt of if I put my effort out there, what will success actually look and feel like when I actually get some traction or when I actually get the yes? And I've always wondered what that would feel like, right? Because you see people getting that, I don't know what to call it, but it's just they take off. Mm-hmm. And you wonder what is that experience like when you know that it's happening? And we got a little bit of experience of that. It wasn't astronomical. I mean, we ended up getting like maybe 50 to 60 micro donors, we call them, people who kind of walk with us on this journey, who are giving us $20 a month. But you know, before that, we had got nothing, right? It was a complete, right? You know, it was a desert of a fundraising kind of move, but we still had faith. You know, you just kind of keep going and, you know, at some point, the justice of your cause will get the light. And it happened on that Sunday morning. I actually ended up writing the follow-up article that evening on Sunday night, putting it out. And then on Monday, we started seeing some action. So, and you were part of that group of people who responded. So thank you so much for believing in what we're doing.
Oh my gosh, Mark. The two articles, they were so powerful. And then I checked it out and I'm like, I just love what you guys are doing. I love how you're making a difference. And thank you for allowing me, because I love being a mentor. You know, I've done a couple sessions with the university students. It's just rewarding and it feels good to be part of something that is making a difference, you know?
Thank you for taking the time to come and teach us what you do with your work. Amazing work, communications, sales training, and it was transformational when you came and actually took more than giving. And that's what we love about, what I love about this opportunity about that we're involved in. It's really more than asking for money. We also need expertise. We need people with skills and knowledge and experience to come and share with us their knowledge, because we're in the people building business here. What we do essentially is we provide these 12-month innovation fellowships to college graduates to immerse them in the entrepreneurship process to build products and to launch companies. And we're set up as a nonprofit because the venture funding model just doesn't work for the level of work we are doing here. It's just a different market and a different place. But beyond the funding, we need so much. We need to scale knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. I'm only one person and I only know so much. And so all these people need to be, their growth needs to be accelerated so that they can capitalize on the opportunity. So being able to tap into minds like yours and of others who have taken the time to actually come and teach. And this is fantastic because it's just right in on time knowledge, built for purpose. It actually is work that they're doing in the world. Mm-hmm. So they listen to you and the next day they can implement and get results. And so that's really exciting.
Yeah. The enthusiasm, it's been so much fun to be part of, you know? So, and now what is your, just, I mean, I know this, but for the listener, what is your big, I guess, mission with what you're doing?
Yeah. Transformation. And what does transformation mean, right? Transformation social, economically, and politically, in that order, or kind of social, economically leads to political change. One of the things that if you think about, Africa has always been about this place that has a lot of potential, but has never been able to capitalize on that. And we are at a point in time right now, if you look at the historical arc, we have an abundance of, we have what we call a demographic dividend. The youngest continent on the planet, median age of 19 and a half years old, sub-Saharan Africa.
Wow.
And that typically says we have a youth bulge, essentially. And so that typically is associated with economic boom. But the reality is those things are not guaranteed, because even if you have that, it doesn't necessarily automatically mean you're going to see this economic growth. You have to actually have to engineer it and do all those things. So the question then becomes, how do you go about doing that? Because, you know, we've been waiting for so many years to see this change since independence, when the African states en masse got independence from the European colonizers in the 60s. And so we've been waiting for this to happen, but it has never happened. And so what has happened instead is this, what I would call political state capture by corrupt folks who see an opportunity to enrich themselves. And state building hasn't taken place on the continent. And so while previously it was extractive through the colonization process of European powers, now it's actual our political forefathers, if you will, who are doing the same thing. And so power has never really come down to the ground, if you will. And the African individual has just never known what it is to live in an aspirational society that is actually growth oriented. So for me, it is about shaping the minds of the people who will emerge through this innovation boom that's going to happen on the continent, because they will be socially, they will be economically empowered, and they'll be the ones in power to actually be able to dictate, to kind of shift the political, social, economic conversation. So for me, I see this as a platform to ride and shape the future. And so that's why we are structured the way we are. We are building multiple companies at once, right? And we're building people at once. Because we do not have the luxury of letting things happen by chance and hoping things work out. It's like, oh my God, there's a wave that's going to crest. We need to ride that wave and shape its outcome. And I'm talking about mindset. I'm talking about culture. I'm talking about, because it's like this. Our vision is 10 companies that provide 10,000 jobs that are valued at $10 billion in value. And that's one company. Like, in a lot of ways, that's one company. That's Salesforce. Actually, Salesforce is $20 billion, right? In Silicon Valley. But for us, we're spreading this across 10 companies. And the idea is, out of that 10,000 employee base, we want to shape the mindset of those people. And we want to be, there will be folks who now in society are in the news. They are going to do talks in different places. And we want them to go out there and kind of start to shape society. They'll be the ones who have relationship with people in politics. They'll be the ones that will have an infrastructure of people who believe in the same way and who believe that you can actually create change and who will not be easily corruptible. We want to create a society of people who are untouchable with a need to actually self-enrich, because we've already created that outcome, if you will. So that's for me what I see it as. But I'm also at the same time very pragmatic in terms of how we're approaching it. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm an innovator. At least I think I am. But I am bottom. I'm at bottom, not keeping my heads in the clouds. I know when that's going to happen. That's 2030 and beginning. For now, what we're doing is we're developing people, right, in the process of launching very early stage startups. We're teaching people the motion of how you actually put something in the world that is effective, a small bit, start an idea, test it out, okay, build on it. And that is a thing that Silicon Valley does better than any other place on earth. And of course, now it's exported because people have moved from there, they've learned from that. That process of launching companies, that is what I learned in the Bay Area. And it is such a powerful thing, because you can see how, if you don't know how to do that, it's very difficult to do. Yeah. And you have to know how to architect your motion so that you can de-risk your move, so that everything you do is well thought out. And people think, I think people misunderstand what makes Silicon Valley tick. There's a lot of things. One is know-how. One is people who've been there, done that, so they know what to do, so they can shorten the time between idea and validation and traction and so on and so forth. That's what makes a place tick. That's why they can build so fast. Yeah. And so having that knowledge and understanding, and having had a window into that world, I know exactly what needs to happen. You also have to build the people and the culture, and you have to put it all together at the same time. I mean, that's a long way of telling you that the vision is transformation. It's a 20-year journey we are on. The first 10 years is to get to that 10 companies that scale up, that provide 10,000 jobs. That's from now to 2030. So for now, we're just purely launching startups and scaling companies. That's what we're focusing for the next 10 years. From 2030 on, now we have some economic power, we have some notoriety, we have some influence. These young people that I'm working with right now, because they're the ones who are going to be the people who have that influence and can shape things. Because the people we're working with right now are 22, 23. They'll be 32 and 33 at that point, right? And so that's what we're doing.
And I love that. Where my mind goes here is because that's a long vision, right? And you even said it earlier, sometimes you just have to keep going how do you keep going? Because there's got to be setbacks. I mean, it can't all be like lightness and roses.
No, it's not. It's a lot of work. One of the things that made me make this move was I was always looking for what is my TED Talk? What is that thing that makes me come alive? And I always knew that it had something to do with activating human potential. That's the thing that I could do without being paid because I love to do it. When I was even in the Bay Area, when I moved to San Francisco in 2014 from San Jose, I had this notion that I would become a life coach, but I never followed through with it because I always found it too soft in the middle, meaning that it just didn't, anybody could be one, right? Like qualified you to be one? And I was always like an imposter, right? So I never followed through with that, but I knew that that's what made me tick. And so what keeps me going is that's what I'm doing right now.
So it's
I'm in the business of launching young people. So it's purpose. It's like what I'm made to do. It's my thing. I love working with young people and unlocking their potential and helping them grow and investing in that. And so that's most of what I do. I love solving problems. I like taking a run at things that nobody else is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what keeps me going is it's also the idea that, holy cow, what else could I be doing? You know, we're only on this planet for such a short period of time. And the reality is most people are not happy with what they're doing. And for a long time, I've been asking myself, what is your TED Talk? You know, what is that thing? I want to be involved in something big and transformational and huge. And what, where is it going to come from? And to me, there is nothing else I can imagine that I would rather be doing or anywhere else. Like, even if I became a billionaire today, I would still do this. And even if I became one, it would spoil what I'm doing because it wouldn't have that working at the edge of, you know, quote unquote, like your own well-being, if you will, like financially, right? That makes it worthwhile. So what keeps me going? It's my calling. It's my purpose. I can't imagine doing anything else, really.
Yeah. I love that. And that reminds me, when we spoke before, and it's been several weeks now, you said something like conduits of a bigger narrative when people are being authentic to the call. Does that relate to what you're talking about right here?
Yeah, we all want to be part of something great. That's that the calling in the human spirit is to be part of a great narrative. That's why we go watch those movies and we get inspired by, you know, great love stories or great stories, the hero narrative, right? And who wants to just exist? Who wants to just kind of clock in, clock out and go home and watch TV or Netflix or that for that matter? Human beings want adventure. That's the truth. And so for me, this is my great adventure. And for the young people I'm working on, it is their great adventure. It is the opportunity for them to actually write a new narrative, change the African narrative is our mantra. Think about it, right? It's like we're saying we can change a place that hasn't changed generation after generation, right? We've seen two generations since independence come through and nothing has happened. But we are saying, look, we believe we can change it. So the audacity of that, it's a big calling. It's daunting. It speaks to why we are here on this planet. I just feel like human beings are at their best when they're involved in a great adventure, period.
Yeah. And I think, Mark, what you said there too, I mean, I love it. It kind of gave me chills. And part of what you said is so many people don't want to live like clocking in, clocking out. And yet some people do. Oh, if I could change one thing, like, because to your point, we're only on the planet for a very short time. Let's make the most of that time. Something else that you said when we spoke before, and this might be related, is you said sometimes living authentically, it can be dangerous.
Yes, because the reality is living authentically puts other people at risk. Mm. Because living authentically is the world, you know, shapes a certain narrative and expects everybody to fit in. And it happens everywhere. That's socialization. That's what culture is in a very real sense. So, and culture by nature is not benign. I mean, culture can actually be negative. There's many negative culture. But also culture is status quo, right? Culture is in a very real sense, very few cultures are designed to continue to activate the human spirit. Maybe at one point they were, and then they you know, times change or whatever, and then maybe they get co-opted and they become like about maintaining what was there before. Because the human being is inspired to live, it's called to adventure, it's called to kind of do great things, or to at least, you know, the things that inspire us and motivate us are generally outside the status quo, because, you know, the status quo is almost by definition outdated in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. And so if you follow that authenticity or your calling, which is outside that zone, the comfort zone of society, it's dangerous, because what you're doing is you're reflecting to everybody else who's in there that, hey, what you're doing is not good enough. What you're doing is probably wrong. Mm-hmm. How you're living is you're basically inadequate. And so it is a very dangerous thing, because it's much easier to just fit in and be like, you know what, this is, I'm checking the boxes. I'm fitting into the nicely defined, you know, fishbowl, and this is all there is. And I'm just going to kind of be part of the crowd. But, you know, the reality is the human race has never moved forward by people sitting in the middle of the fishbowl. It's people who dive out and kind of look at the bigger ocean. And, you know, that's been our journey, right? I mean, yeah. You look at the human history, it's always been about living at the edge and pushing the envelope and kind of finding new lands and kind of doing new things. And now, you know, we have SpaceX and Elon Musk and his folks are going to orbit. And that's the thing that inspires us. You know, that's chasing the edge, right? Because for one reason or another, the human spirit is not satisfied with status quo, right? It wants adventure. It wants to live at the edge. And I don't know why that is, but if you hear that calling and you ignore it, that's not living authentically. No. If you are authentic to that calling, that's dangerous. That is risk. That is by definition jumping outside the fishbowl, right?
Yeah. God, that's awesome. I think it's great insight. And it's not just cultures. It can be family dynamics. It can be, you know, work, so many things. It's designed to keep us exactly where we are, you know, strange. And yet if you know that you're being called to something more, if you know that something that you're doing is not really authentically you and you ignore it, I think it's so painful. Like it's just painful.
Yes. And I remember the thing. So for me making this move, I had no business making this move, Bobby, when I made the move. I mean, I was in my mid-40s. And what I should be doing is riding my, you know, career into the sunset. You know, and that was my plan. You know, I had the notion that I would, you know, I was kind of had a decent career in the tech space. I was, you know, I could take money off the table and just ride it into the sunset. And I had a 10-year window I was working with. And I was saying, hey, after 10 years, I'll put money aside and come back. And, you know, I was investing in real estate and kind of doing what you're supposed to do to kind of secure your retirement years.
Yeah.
And the risk was immense, right? Mm-hmm. To uproot yourself at that point in your life, you don't have any more do-overs, right? It's you've got to make it work.
That's right. So,
and so for me, it was like, it was the most challenging decision I've probably ever made in my life. And it was what got me over was I kept remembering this famous line or this famous kind of like story. Somebody went to a nursing home and talked to some people who are in their retirement years, their golden years in the nursing home, and asked them, what is it that you regret the most? And that famous line is the things that I didn't do. Right.
Yeah.
I thought to myself at 75, I don't want to be sitting somewhere and saying, I wish I could, I would, I should have type thing. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That to me was so scary. The thought of being that person was so scary, because at that point, what are you going to do? Like, it's over. And so that to me was the thing that I was like, yes, that one thought got me over.
Yeah.
If anything, yeah.
I love that, because, you know, there is a point where it's hard to go back and change things, you know? Right. I think it might have been Dolly Parton. I know it was years ago, but she said something like, I'd rather regret the things that I do than regret the things I didn't do. It's like, yeah, you know, we might make some mistakes along the way, and maybe those are regrets. I don't know. But as long as I'm learning, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and how do you know it's the right thing to do? Is it that authenticity again, right?
Yeah.
The signal. Right? You can't know for sure, but is it authentically, is that the thing that just makes you come alive? Like, that's the thing that you can see that it's speaking to you uniquely. It's got your thumbprint, if you will, mm-hmm. in terms of what is the calling or what is the opportunity, right? It's a tough one, right? Because I don't know. I mean, this is one of the things that everybody asks in their life. Like, what am I supposed to do with my life? You know? And for a long time, I asked that question, Bobby, for many years, from 2014, like forever, right? But the most intense period was between 2014 and 2017 when it actually happened.
Wow.
And I was unhappy. I was miserable about not underperforming, about not living up to my potential. It's like, I remember this, and living in San Francisco was great for this because it always reminded you about what you were not doing because people are doing things all around you. And there was this one ad, or a billboard ad, like a neon sign ad in the BART station, which is the underground train from San Francisco to Oakland. And it had this face of this middle-aged kind of with a scruffy beard, up close photo picture of this middle-aged guy who was just looking at you like, you know, and he had this, the statement was, oh, so you have a good idea, great, or something like that. Something like basically just telling you, okay, take a number, you know, you're one of those
good ideas.
I can't remember what it was, but it was every day I would walk into that thing and I had no answer for this. You know how your mind hates cognitive dissonance, so it will always give an alibi for you or kind of make up some narrative. But, you know, I'm tired or whatever. I had no answer for this question, for this statement. He got me all the time, and I got mad.
Wow.
But it kept egging me, and I don't remember what brand it was or what it was about, but it stuck in my head.
Right? But it got you.
It got me.
Well, and-
yeah.
I think that's interesting for a number of reasons. Number one, I think that when it's almost like there's this period where the heat gets turned up a little bit and we're like, and it's like, it's almost intolerable until we can figure out like, what is it? You know? So there's that part. And I hear that in your story. And also you said something, Mark, and I think this is brilliant. You said, it's not underperforming. It's not like you were underperforming, but that sense of I'm not living up to my true potential. And those,
yes.
A lot of times people think that's one and the same. And those, I think it's brilliantly said because I think they're two separate things.
Yes. So I was playing a small game.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, you're supposed to be in the big leagues and you are playing not even in, like maybe in college, right?
Or a rec league, recreation.
Yeah.
League.
Exactly. Or at least in college, there is some, you're going somewhere, quote unquote, or there's some value in it. Maybe you have a scholarship or whatever.
Yeah.
But so for me, that's what it was. It's just like, man, you are not, you should be doing better. You should be playing at a different level. And that's more about you feel in terms of the role you have, you're bigger than that role. And not in some arrogant way, just in some way that's like, man, like my voice is not being heard, or I just feel like I have to kind of fit in. Square peg in a round hole kind of thing. That's a common experience for anybody who, for a lot of people, I think, but it's about saying now what, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that can be painful.
It is hard.
It is
really, really hard. Bobby, I remember days where I was angry. I had sleepless nights. I was unhappy. It was so hard. You know, people always hear stories of people who've crossed over onto the other side but when you're going through it, you don't have anybody to kind of commiserate with because you're wondering even if you should be thinking those thoughts. Why don't you just, you know, be happy with what you're doing? It's you know, just take care of, you know, what's in front of you, your dad, and you're doing all those things. But this thing won't go away.
Wow. You know? Yeah. It wouldn't go away.
It wouldn't go away.
You said 3 years.
3 years of searching and asking. And saying, okay, I'm going to do my 9-to-5 and I'm going to be great at it. But in the evening, I want to pursue my purpose. I want to go after becoming somebody who activates human potential. And what that was this life coach thing. And I pursued that in terms of investigating what that could be and what I needed to do to get, you know, to get certified and start that type of practice. And I got this close. I remember one night I was 12 hours away from spending $10,000 to get a certification as a to start my life coaching certification. And I was on a call with this person who was telling me about their program and all this sort of stuff. And I was, because I was, I'd gone to the point where I was like, you know what, you got to pull the trigger at some point. Because when I got to San Francisco, I deferred for a year, just kind of what, you know, looking around who's doing it, you know, what's the path, and just dithering and kind of saying, okay, the first year, let me kind of settle into my new job and kind of get that under control. Okay. Second year, you know, I'll just get home and I'm so tired because, you know, you, the work that, that we do, the jobs we do now is in the knowledge industry, right? Which is basically 21st century professional. They're exhausting, right? They take a lot
That's
of
work. That's right.
And so I'll get home and I'll be like, oh, man, the last thing I want to do is go out and talk to anybody right now. I don't want to do that. But the third year, I was like, okay, fine. I need to get this done. And so the only way to do it was spend some money and then chase it. But I was talking to this gentleman and he was like, okay, you just make the decision. And so, but I was like, yeah, let me just sleep on it. And he was a bit pushy with that. And I was like, listen, I'm just going to sleep on it.
Good for you.
I didn't do it the next day. Right? Because if I did it, then I would have gone down that path. And I wasn't sold on it because, like I said, it was too soft in the middle. There was something that was missing that I need, which is, I don't know, there was this imposter syndrome thing. You know, if I was going to do something like that, I had to be well qualified to position myself out there, have a master's in psychology or, you know, I mean, So I just felt like, man, this is, I can't do this. Anyway, so.
Yeah. So it sounds like you reached out, you did some research. And here's the thing too, I think this is important for people to realize. It's okay to do research and then say, that's not for me. That's also good. What advice or what steps would you, if someone's listening and they're kind of in that painful part that you were you were talking about, what ideas do you have for them that could help them move themselves through it?
If I remember how I felt about that life coaching thing, becoming a life coach, the best analogy I could give is, you know, when you have two magnets and you're pushing them together, and they're both the same pole, the same polarity, and they're just not connecting, right? There's that energy, but they're pushing each other away. Have you ever played with magnets like that and they just don't connect?
Yeah, like years and years ago.
Right. So you have these two magnets. I used to always wonder about that, but it's the same polarity, right? They're pushing, they don't connect. Mm. And there's an energy there, but it's not connecting. And so to me, that's what that felt like. It felt like, yeah, there's an energy here. It's around this magnet, but it's pushing me away. Like it's not but when I finally found what I was pursuing, it wasn't something that, in theory, like in my mind, it made total sense, but I was looking for a reason why it's a bad idea. And that's how I approached everything, right? The life coaching thing on paper seemed like a good idea, but when I tried to pursue it, it just didn't work. It just, my spirit was just not happy with it. It just didn't sit well in my stomach. Now this move was more like, oh my God, this is scary and crazy. But every step I took was more compelling than the one before. Like there was nothing, like I couldn't deny it. That's how I could put it. I couldn't deny it because I put one foot in front of the other. It's like that Indiana Jones movie where you put one foot and there's no bridge, but when you put your foot out, there's a bridge underneath it.
It appears.
And you're like, I gotta keep going. What am I gonna do? Stop? And what am I gonna, you know?
Yep.
So that was the difference between those two experiences. One didn't sit well in my stomach, just didn't feel like solid. The other one was scary, exhilarating. But as I was trying to kind of deny it, I would keep moving and I would get more validation. I'll give you an example. When I set up my first website at first I was going to do a venture fund and I was like, yeah, I'm going to set this thing up. Because I started doing my research around, okay, how do you solve this problem of enabling entrepreneurship in Africa? And I was like, okay, it's a venture fund. And so I started doing my research around that, who's funding people and what's going on. And I was like, okay, cool. Let me set up a domain and kind of put this narrative together. And let me email some people here to test, you know, to see what happens. And I'm talking about entrepreneurs, like venture capitalists in Silicon Valley and well-off people who I'd never met. And for the first time in my life, I send out an email, cold emails, and I get responses from people.
Wow.
And that's the bridge. And I'm like, holy cow, there's something here.
Yeah.
And so those two things, you know, just like, huh, okay, there's something here. This is like all that. It's like that whole person's role in your journey was to respond to that email so that you could keep going.
That's right.
Whether or not nothing happened between you and them in terms of them enabling you, that was it.
That's right. Just to help you keep going. It's fascinating how those things appear too. Like, and a lot of times I think they appear when we most need them to appear.
Yeah. I think back at those beginning days and people taking meetings with me, and that's all I needed. I just needed that meeting because it would take me to the next, it would give me the energy to kind of keep moving.
Yeah.
Because I was walking into so much uncertainty. I didn't have a blueprint. You know, what are you doing? Like, you've never done this before. You're doing something completely new. You have no pedigree, nothing. But yeah, that's the journey.
It's the journey. And I think it's really tapping into that energy, really paying attention to it. I loved what you said, where the energy can be similar and it can be close, but that doesn't mean that's the fit. But then, like, what's compelling? And I also like your hack there, if you will, of looking for reasons for why this is a bad idea, trying to deny it, because that also is going to give you, like, in your stomach or your gut, like, but I don't want to deny this. I mean, I think that's important data too.
Yeah. And it's part of, so how do you go about proving that, or at least trying to invalidate it? It's, you got to do your research and you got to get into the work and you got to start thinking, okay, you know, what do I need to know? What do I not know? Like, how, I guess you're trying to say, okay, between me and the outcome, what's the gap? So that's what I was trying to figure out. And what is the thing that's going to tell me, yeah, this is just not going to work because there is this, I don't know, like, I needed more information. So instead of sitting about and kind of twiddling my thumbs, I got into the weeds of the domain to do research and to kind of put together. That was my move. So I don't know what somebody else's move is. Maybe it's developing a skill. Maybe it's practicing something. Maybe it's going to meet people. Maybe it's taking a class. Maybe it's going somewhere. I don't know what it is, but it's getting closer to the thing.
Just some way to dip your toe in, right? Just so that you can start learning or immersing yourself in it. Even if you learn, oh, this isn't right, that's okay.
Yeah, so. And you know, learning is always beneficial. I mean, and in my view, it's like, what do you have to lose, right? Just go immerse yourself. It's your time, and your time is going to pass anyway. So you might as well figure out in a thoughtful way how you can learn more about the subject, you know, how you can get around it, how you can get around people who are doing it. And that doesn't cost anything, right? So get out the door and get out there, and good things will happen because information is power, knowledge is power. Nothing happens but at the intersection of a conversation. Nothing happens until people talk, right? You know, or until people communicate, rather, right?
That's right.
So, yeah.
That's right. God, Mark, this has been amazing. There's one final, something you said when we spoke earlier, if you have a couple more minutes. You had said, because we were talking, and you said it was about changing the narrative. And you said changing the narrative means that you can't do the same thing as everyone else has done. Do you remember saying that?
Yeah, because again, it's that idea of changing the status quo.
Yeah. Right?
I don't know where we're going, Bobby, but it seems like we're never satisfied with life as it's handed to us, or it's defined for us right where we find ourselves. And you almost constantly have to keep reinventing yourself and pushing. And in my view, I think a lot of it has to do with this spiritual search, because we are a spiritual being having a human experience. And, you know, the spiritual world is an unlimited world, right? But the human experience is defined by limitation. There's you and there's me. There's a limited scope to our lives.
Yeah.
We are spiritual beings who are completely, if we are spiritual, then we have no limit. The spirit doesn't have a boundary, right? It is this one thing that you and I are actually, when we pursue spirituality, we're trying to find union with that bigger thing, which we are part of, which we're just an extension of, but now we've been brought into these human vessels. But we yearn for that spiritual, expansive oneness. It sounds all hokey and crazy, but in my mind, that's what is the yearning in the human spirit for, to be unbounded, to not suffer for anything that is limiting, whether it's an idea, whether it's, what is that thing, right? It's, how do you explain that? Because, you know, it's that idea that even when you achieve some goals, you still want more. And sometimes not just because you're greedy or whatever it is, whatever drives a person, they want more. How do you explain that, right?
Yeah.
It is that spiritual side of us that is seeking expansion and expression. But we express it through the human ways of doing things, which is acquiring stuff or status or, you know, whatever it is, right? Or that's how we express that. And sometimes it could be positive. It could be like even winning an Olympic gold medal, right? It's a pushing the envelope. And I think that's that spiritual side of us that wants to be unbounded, to be expansive, to be unlimited.
And to connect. It is, it's and powerful. Connect, yes,
because that's it. Like there is no, because there's only oneness. I mean, you can't, they're not two spirits. It's one.
Yeah.
And so you want to connect with that expansiveness. The idea is to connect with that expansive, unlimited spiritual realm, which is this one big oneness, if you will. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that it makes sense. Mark, this has been, I've so looked forward to this, interview, and it's just, it's been fantastic. If anyone wants to learn more about what you're doing, or if they want to connect with you, what's the best way for them to go about that?
They can go to our website, impactafrica.network, spelled the way you say it, impactafrica.network. They can email me at mark@impactafrica.network. That's the best way to reach me or learn more about us.
Perfect. So I'll put that in the show notes because I would love for people to see what you're doing. Maybe they can participate in some way. I know it's been rewarding for me. Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I just want to encourage people to pursue that authentic calling that they have. And sometimes it will take a while, but if you don't bury it, nurture it, it will be painful. But it is your path. It is the thing that you need to find where your calling and your purpose. You're gonna have to be courageous and bold. But yeah, you know, that is the one thing you should fight to preserve and pursue. Because I think when we all pursue that, then we don't have time for a bunch of stuff that is beneath us. I think the world needs more people who are activated and living on the edge. And living their authentic selves. And if you're doing that, honestly, that's your best life you could live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about the journey. It's about the process. Yeah. I mean, that's all I would say. I know if there's anybody listening who's kind of stuck in that doldrum, I've been there, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel if you're willing to pursue it.
Yeah. Mark, I think that's beautifully said. And one of the things I love about talking with you is I can hear it. I can hear your purpose. I can hear your energy every time you're talking about it. So it's infectious. I just love being around that.
I want to continue working with you, and connecting with you always just makes me happy. And I look forward to kind of whatever we can do in the future to kind of just continue putting that good energy out there.
Perfect. Perfect. So, Mark, thank you so much. This has just been a fabulous interview, and I really appreciate your time because I know how busy you are, and it's nighttime where you are.
It sure is. But yeah, anytime for you, Bobby.
I don't know about you, but I found my conversation with Mark to be very inspiring and insightful. Here are some of my key takeaways. Number one, I found it very touching when he spoke of being in an environment, but not of the environment. And how there is nothing more assaulting to the human spirit than being ignored or ostracized. It made me think about all the different ways that this can happen, from society to religion, and sometimes even our own families. Number two, if you are tired or feeling worn down, keep going, because eventually the justice of your cause will get the light that it deserves. I loved that phrasing from Mark. Number three, the human spirit cries out to be part of something bigger. We want more than to simply clock in and clock out. I believe that he's right, and I believe that when you see that person who is audacious enough to pursue their dreams, you can't help but be drawn into that a little bit. Number four, living authentically can be dangerous because it sometimes means challenging the existence of the status quo. Again, this can exist across a number of dimensions, from the larger society to a business climate to communities and to families. I was talking to someone once years and years ago, and she was talking about how systems are perfectly designed to maintain the status quo. She went on to give the example of a dysfunctional family. Many people think that a dysfunctional family is one that doesn't work at all, when in fact, it functions for some of the members, just not all the members of the family. It functions for those seeking to maintain the status quo. And I think to Mark's point, when you challenge a status quo because you're being authentic to yourself, sometimes that can kind of feel dangerous. Number five, the things that we regret most in life are the things that we didn't do. This is something that I've believed for years, and here's how I use it. If I'm about to try something that feels risky or that could lead to some sort of failure, I simply ask myself, what will I regret more, trying and failing or not trying at all? Not trying at all is almost always the larger regret. Number six, the authentic calling is the thing that makes you come alive, and it causes you pain if you try to ignore it. Number seven, I found that the distinction he made between not underperforming and not living up to your potential to be very powerful. They're two totally different things, and yet we confuse them all the time. To his point, you can be performing at a high level and still feel like you're not living up to your potential. And I loved how Mark put it. He was playing in a small game. Number eight, it is okay to research a path and decide that it's not for you. That is still progress. Give yourself the grace and the margin to explore without judging the exploration or the outcome. And number nine, changing the narrative means that we can't just do what others have always done. I truly hope that you enjoyed my conversation with Mark. I invite you to take a look at his work at Impact Africa Network. I have found my work there as a mentor to be extremely rewarding. Now that we are into the new year, you're probably feeling the rush to set goals and resolutions. Too often, it doesn't take those goals and resolutions very long before they start gathering dust as they get pushed aside by other things that crowd them out. To combat that, and to help you stay on track, I'm putting together a free video guide on how we can recognize if we're falling prey to one of the biggest derailers of our goals. And I call it the Just Wait voice. I've coached well over 3,000 people in my career, and I've seen this insidious little voice show up and whisper doubt in our ear just as we're about to act. And so instead of acting on our goals and making progress, we decide to wait. Indefinitely. I truly hate that voice. I mean, I am using the word hate. I hate that voice, and I want to help combat it with what I've learned over the years. You can go to www.unyielded.net/goalkiller and sign up for the free guide. Again, this has been the Unyielded Podcast, where we are committed to bringing stories and guests who can help us all live more fulfilled and authentic lives. If you found it helpful, please consider leaving us a 5-star review on Apple, and please share it with someone who could benefit from the message of hope and positivity that we're sharing. By doing that, who knows? You might just help someone have the best year of their life yet.